You're listening to Pros Like Us, brought to you by NFL Draft Blitz. And now, without any further ado, here's Alex and Lou.
That's right, gang. We are back and better than last time, we hope. We've had our little hiatus here between free agency and the draft, and we are ready to rock and roll. Of course, as always, the NFL, it brings us some of the greatest reality TV and just these stories write themselves. But I want to bring in my pal Alex. He's been traveling. He's been all over the globe, it sounds like. But Alex, we're back, and how you feeling? You ready to go?
I'm ready to go, man. The draft is right around the corner. Everybody's talking about it, and you know I'm a big draft guy, and I can't get it. You know, I can't get enough of it. So I'm ready to roll.
Right. Well, before we get into the draft, you know, I mean, the big move, I guess, not necessarily a free agent move, more of a trade, but Stephon Diggs seems like we were talking about him most of the season, not being happy with the situation in Buffalo. Surprise, surprise. Eventually, he does get moved to the Houston Texans, and I guess here we are. the Texans were a really good team last year, very young, up and coming, and they add what I'm thinking they think is a true number one receiver. Stephon fell off a little bit at the end of last year. He would probably tell you it was more to do with the offense and his quarterback and every other excuse in the book. But here we are. He's in Houston, and Buffalo says bye-bye.
I mean, the Texans are becoming like a firehouse out there. I mean, they're like – Let me just put it out there. Their defense improved, right? But they've got Offensive Rookie of the Year and C.J. Stroud. And then C.J. Stroud has Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Robert Woods, Dalton Schultz. They traded for Joe Mixon. That wasn't a bad trade, by the way. Mixon has been a really good player for the longest time. Now they bring in Stephon Diggs, who is labeled the number one wide receiver in this offense. So, I mean, the Texans are quickly becoming the heavy favorite in the AFC South, and this is a team that could challenge for, like, you know, a top three seed in that conference. And I'm impressed by the moves that the Texans have been making. And the fact is, it's a one-year rental. So if it doesn't work out, they can move on from Stephon Diggs, but they get themselves a number one weapon. And that's something, you know, that you can't argue about. So I'm just impressed by what that organization, that franchise is doing overall.
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete 180 from where they were a few years ago. The whole situation with Jack Easterby, and I don't know if he was part televangelist, part football executive. I'm not exactly sure what was happening there. But Kyle McNair made the right choice with Nick Caserio, and he's really, I mean, he took a lot of crap, you know, when he first, you know, took the job, but just about every move they've made since then seems to be a winning move. And typically all the moves look 10 times better when you've got the quarterback right. And fortunately for them, CJ Stroud fell into their lap. Carolina did not, you know, did not draft him. Obviously they took Bryce Young, and here we are. And you didn't mention, they also signed Danielle Hunter to a pretty decent contract to put him opposite of Anderson in terms of edge rushing. So on their side of it, they're doing what I think the new formula in the NFL has been, and try to load up when you have a really good quarterback on a rookie deal and just kind of put pieces around him. right? Now, I don't know how they did it, some sort of contract magic, but they wiped away, like you said, Alex, it's just a one-year thing, the last 3 years of Stephon Diggs' deal. So now he's, I mean, in terms of motivation, he's got to be motivated to really put a big season forth to try to get another payday, even though he's on the wrong side of 30. As far as the Texans are concerned, you've got a motivated player that's trying, you know, that's trying. Now, the only downside I see here, and again, I don't want to wish this on him because I'd love to see young team, you know, up and coming teams kind of get, find their legs and really start to excel. I mean, they were, you know, they played a good half and they won a playoff game. Game at home, and then they played a really good half against Baltimore, and then the wheels kind of came off. They had some injury. I mean, say what you will, but this is a team on the come. So the concern, though, is, and again, I don't think this is an automatic, but you have seen it in the past where a young quarterback gets they bring in a new number one receiver, if you would. Okay. Now we had all kinds of success. We didn't see Nico Collins coming. I don't know. I know I didn't. Tank Dell, you thought, hey, maybe he's got a chance because they really don't have, they didn't have a number one in Houston. Him coming in as a rookie, maybe he could pop a little. He popped big time until he got hurt. Okay. But now you bring in Stephon Diggs and you just don't want to see the young quarterback feel like, I got to get this guy the ball. We got to get this guy the ball 8 to 10 times a game. Because sometimes that kind of takes away from all the growth and all the really, I don't want to say the surprise, but the ability to spread the ball around to Collins and Dell and Schultz. Right. I mean, we saw it kind of with Baker in Cleveland when they brought OBJ in. It just never meshed, and it seemed this Baker trying to force him the ball, and it just became this convoluted mess. And again, Stephon's been a guy that kind of talked his way out of Minnesota, talked his way out of Buffalo. You know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. You know, so again, it's not. It looks great. I think it can work, but that's the only thing that I have concern with is that, again, you've got a second year quarterback, receiver that's been in the league 10 years, expecting to catch 100 and some balls, score, you know, 10 touchdowns plus. And if it's not happening, it could get a little murky, to say the least.
What happens to the Bills here? I mean, Gabe Davis signed with the Jaguars
for sure.
Traded for a second round pick. Buffalo Bills need to hit on receiver a couple of times, I think, in the first four rounds. I mean, they got to get some weapons for Josh Allen. I mean, where's the offense going to be coming from? I mean, are you hoping that Dalton Kincaid becomes like, you know, the second coming of like Travis Kelce or something like that? I mean, I guess that's wishful thinking, but I'm just thinking they got a hit on a couple of wide receivers in this draft. I realize it's a deep draft, and even if you don't get one in the first round, there'll be plenty of guys on day two that you can hit on. And the Buffalo Bills, you know, have done a good job drafting players in the past, especially at receiver. I mean, they did find Gabe Davis in the fourth round there. So they got a hit, Lou, because, I mean, Josh Allen, who is he going to be throwing to in 2024?
Well, they brought in Curtis Samuel, who, you know, guy from Ohio State. So he's got the pedigree. Well, he's got a pedigree. He really hasn't like popped yet. So they must see something in him. Not that he's going to be a number one receiver, but, you know, he'll certainly add to that room. Shakir was kind of coming on at the end of last year when Diggs was having his issues. So again, these aren't known commodities. They're not reliable commodities, but that's what they have right now. So absolutely, I agree with you. They do have to bring in more talent at that position. if you look at the free agent market, if they're, you know, again, 1 year rentals, the only ones that you really would even consider, again, if you think he still has any juice in the tank, OBJ, but I don't know that they go that way. But Tyler Boyd is kind of a sneaky one to me that, again, not going to be your huge over the top guy, but as far as working the middle of the field, working opposite of Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, I think that, you know, that could be a good signing for them, you know, short term. But certainly you got to bring in some rookies, but you can't expect them to like pop right away. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, I want to say, I mean, Diggs was on the field during the playoffs in the end of the year, but it wasn't like he was setting the world on fire, but they were still moving the ball and scoring points. Again, if you're a Bills fan, you the concern is it's like Josh Allen, Josh Allen, Josh. I mean, he's got to be like Superman every game, just about every play. So yeah, it's weird times there in Buffalo, but you still, even though they're kind of decimated on that side of the ball, I still think they're the class of that division. I mean, outside of the Jets being extremely lucky with injuries and age with injuries, you know, I do you really see? I mean, the Patriots, forget it. Don't even discuss them. The Dolphins, okay. I mean, I think they kind of shot their shot. I don't know that with the group they currently have, and they've lost a lot of guys too. I mean, they were another team that had to, you know, dump a lot of salary. But I just don't see it. So as bad as it might look for Buffalo, I still think they're the class of that division.
I don't know. I mean, the Dolphins were extremely good last year, especially on offense, Lo. I mean, with Watkins, with Tyreek Hill, Tua played a full season. I mean, that offense was in full gear. The only thing is, I mean, they ran up against a very good Kansas City Chiefs team, and, you know, they didn't play at home, which is a big thing. You know, having Tua there, you want to play at home so your offense, you will be kicking in full gear in sunny Florida. But I think the Miami Dolphins are here to stay if Tua can stay healthy, right? I mean, it is a big if. I think that defense will come along, so I'm not sure the Buffalo Bills are the class of is an elite team in the AFC East. I think they've got
Not
competition.
necessarily an elite team, but just look, I guess I'm just basing on the other team. And the thing is, yeah, offensively, I, you know, no problem with the Dolphins. Obviously, it's a little bit of a machine, but you know, you lose Wilkins on defense, you lose Van Ginkel, Xavien Howard. I mean, these are, I mean, I don't want to say cornerstones, but they were pretty, you know, impactful players on your defense. So I don't know. It remains to be seen. We'll see what Fangio can do with that group. And yeah, I will say, I just, in my mind today, April 7th or 8th, whatever we're recording, April 7th, I still think Buffalo's got the best team. Now, again, it's not by a huge margin, but I still think they have the best team in that division.
I don't know. Watch out for the Jets. I mean, we'll see if you know, A-Rod come. I don't know. Oh man.
Father
I
time,
mean,
father time and the injury bug. I just, it looks great on paper. It did last year coming into the year. You know, Tyron Smith, hell, you know, that looks like a huge, I mean, obviously, even if he only plays half the season, is a huge upgrade from what they had. But, you know, is it going to be enough, you know, to only play a short amount of time? Or if he does play the entire season, I mean, that's going to be kind of short of miraculous. I mean, so again, it's if they stay healthy. I mean, that's a huge if, and that would be the only caveat that I have is that the Jets certainly, you know, will be right there with the Bills.
All right, you're a big believer in Buffalo. You know why you're a big believer in Buffalo? Is because Patrick Mahomes has the Buffalo Bills number. You know that's why you're in there. I mean,
I
you're
do view
hoping.
everything through a kind of a jaded view, Alex. I will admit to
That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's got to be a different team. And I mean, if the Jets come out or the
You
Dolphins
hope,
come out,
yeah,
maybe
like
they'll have a
I
better shot against the Chiefs. The Buffalo Bills just don't seem to.
I'm all for
know,
it. I'd
it
love
right
to. I'd love to
Kansas
see Aaron Rodgers be healthy the entire year. They need him to be healthy the entire year, and just not just a healthy, but like be close to what he was, you know, before the injury. And then the offensive line. So, and I'm sure, you know, they've drafted pretty well outside of Zach Wilson. They've drafted fairly well. Maybe they whiffed on Mekhi Becton too. So, well, maybe I'm getting over my skis here, giving Joe Douglas a little bit more credit, but he did, you know, in one draft, the offensive and defensive rookies of the year. So those guys are really, really good. So anyway, so they made a rule change at the league meetings. They've adopted what's close to the XFL kickoff rule. And for those of you that weren't fine connoisseurs of the XFL, which I don't know if many were, the kickoff is a little bit different. The kicker still kicks from the same position. It's just that both teams line up the balance of their players, the gunners, the wedge, you know, whatever you want to call it, those guys are on the receiving team side of the ball. So the kicker is actually kicking behind the rest of his players, which it looks really strange, but they kind of line up, I want to say 5 yards apart. None of those guys can move until the ball is received. And it's primarily health and safety oriented, but also to force teams to kick the ball inbounds or the landing area and returns come back to the game. Whereas, you know, in the previous couple of years, I mean, kickers just booted out of the end zone and it's just a non-play. It's almost like the old extra point. I mean, you get up and go get a beer, get up and go to the bathroom, you know, whatever. But it was just like this foregone conclusion, either, you know, the extra point was going to be made or kickoffs going through the end zone or into the end zone. It's fair catch, you know, whatever, but it's going to produce more returns and less injuries. Again, it's a one-year experiment. They're going to try to see where it goes. It'll be interesting to see like the strategies that these special team coaches come up with, because I'm sure it can't be as simple as just, you know, nine or 10 guys just plowing into each other 5 yards apart, like just a long line of scrimmage. And then some guy looking to break, contain, and then go the distance. I think that's what they're seeing is in the best case. But I think some of the shrewder special teams coaches are going to have different strategies in terms of on the defensive side of this, you know, how they deploy. Maybe they use different, not necessarily the field goal kicker. Maybe some teams will use like a position player. And again, through my jaded eye, Justin Reed for the Chiefs is a kicker, and he plays safety. So you have that extra guy that can tackle, and you know, just in case. So anyway, that's my 2 cents on the new rule. It did cause a couple of guys to come flying off of free agency. No later was the rule announced that Cordarrelle Patterson signed with the Steelers, and the Chiefs went out and got themselves the best rugby player in the world. So there you have it, Alex.
I don't know. I mean, this looks like it's going to be a little bit strange.
Oh.
I think especially in the beginning.
Oh, because it looks weird.
It's going to look like it's going to look like a different play, I think, the first couple of weeks. And it will take guys time to adjust. I mean, Rich McKay like came out and he's saying, I'm quoting him, "We're in the business of creating an entertaining product and putting a product on the field that should be competitive in every moment. And we created a play that was no longer competitive." And that's what he means as far as, you know, the old kickoff rules. So it's a big change, but the time has come to make that change. So I guess, like you said, Lou, they want to see more returns. They want to see the play come back to the way it was. They want teams to be returning it and not just settling for touchbacks. And and that's why they're creating it. So again, it's going to be strange getting used to in the first couple of weeks. I think, so it will be entertaining to see how special teams coaches and how players will adjust overall.
Yeah, and again, they've got, OTAs and training camp to deal with that those pieces, preseason games. It'd be interesting to see if some coaches just say, you know what, screw it. We're going to kick it, we're going to kick it into the end zone, through the end zone, and give the ball, give the team the ball at the 30-yard line and just let's go. Let's not even worry about it. So, we'll see. That's really the worst penalty, if you would. It's not a penalty in, in terms, not going to throw a flag, but in terms of putting your defense in a different position. But again, it's the 30. It's not like it's coming way out, goes out of bounds. The other team gets the ball at the 40. There's some other rules as well that I didn't go too deep into the weeds on, but that's kind of the gist of it. And like Alex said, it's going to be an adjustment period. It's going to look strange if you've never watched the XFL. And ironically, the newly formed UFL, that's a combination or a merger of the XFL and UFL, that this is their second weekend playing, they did not bring that rule into their newfound league. Just the XFL used it. So I thought that was kind of ironic because that's what I was looking forward to, like the first week. Weekend. I said, well, I'll watch a little bit to see how this weird kickoff works. And they've got a normal kickoff that we've been used to for so many years. So anyway, moving on, Alex. We'll talk about the draft for a little bit, but this is something interesting that I think we've taken a look at the last couple of years. DraftKings came out with their over-unders for the season 2024 in terms of wins for teams. And at the top, you wouldn't, I don't know that there's much of a surprise here, but you've got at 11.5, Baltimore, Kansas City, and San Francisco. No surprises there, right, Alex?
Well, obviously those should be like the top three teams heading into, 2024.
Now,
So, I mean, I guess
they
they're
did put these out before the Diggs trade, but at 10. 10.5. Interesting. A couple of teams. Atlanta. Okay. Buffalo. Cincinnati. Dallas. Detroit. Green Bay. Miami. There you go. There's your Dolphins. And Philadelphia. So I thought Atlanta. I mean, it's like, wow, Kirk Cousins, a lot of respect from the gamblers. Here we go.
has
Green
Kirk
Bay,
Cousins
obviously.
won. Lou, with all due respect, I've loved Kirk Cousins back in the day when he was at Michigan State.
Now,
I loved him when
don't
Washington
forget,
took him in the
this is
fourth
regular
round.
season wins, Alex. Don't get too lathered up here. Give him a break.
But again, what has Kirk Cousins
A lot of
won
regular
during
season
his
games.
time? What has he done? I mean, has he won a lot of division titles and what? Look it up. I mean, his history out there. He's won some games, but has he won a lot of divisions in the NFC East? Has he taken those, Lou? I mean, I may be
Washington
wrong,
kind of,
but
well,
maybe he took
his team
one.
kind of sucked in Washington. I don't know that we can really look at that and say that was on him. Now, Minnesota, a little bit different. He's going to come under some scrutiny because, he's had weapons since he's been there. So, and I think this is more of a function of the division that they play in as well. None of those teams have really kind of, I don't know, shown that they could be winners. Tampa, we'll see if Baker can do it again. Carolina is just absolutely dreadful. It's really tough to say. New Orleans is kind of in a weird spot too. So interesting. I mean, it really is. But
So Kirk Cousins,
anyway, yeah, I mean, Kirk, yeah, a lot of respect
at the
there.
start of next season, Kirk Cousins is going to be 36 years old. He's coming off a torn ACL, all right?
Achilles,
Serious
Achilles,
injury
Achilles,
for
Achilles
any,
actually might be
okay.
worse.
It's even worse. and he's going to Atlanta, a team that hasn't won much since like the Matt Ryan days.
Let me guess. You're
Respect, I mean, you've got the weapons.
Put it under here.
I'm looking at under here, Lou. Even though I think Atlanta could definitely take that division, but I can't imagine them winning like 11 games next season. I mean, does that defense give you confidence that this team is going to be great? Has Kyle Pitts produced like an all-pro, you know, great tight end? He hasn't. Drake London came on like in the second half of this season. He's still got to show it to me. And the fact that, I mean, the Bucs have continuity coming. Baker Mayfield is coming back. They brought back Mike Evans. They got better weapons than the Atlanta Falcons. So I think there's some truth to that. So Carolina is going to be a little bit better, but still going to be the worst in this division. We'll see what happens with the Saints. You don't know like what the situation is with Derek Carr there. So I think it's going to be between the Bucs and the Falcons. But I can't imagine like the Falcons winning 11 or 12 games. I can't. Just call me crazy.
It seems a little rich. I just thought it was interesting that the Kirk Cousins boost. So that's a good one there. The rest of them, I think I could probably deal with a little bit or feel halfway decent about. Philadelphia, I just, you know, I think all the talent in the world, but it just at the end of the year, you just got this weird vibe that how do you go from being, you know, the best team in the NFC to just being almost, you know, if they hadn't won a few, you know, a bunch of games early, they may not have even made the damn playoffs. I mean, that was just ugly. So hopefully they get their mojo back. You got to believe, you know, with all the talent they have in that building, that they should be able to get that straightened out. The Dolphins, yeah, like you said, I mean, they're gonna win games. Packers coming on. Detroit, you know, see if they can come back, come off of that kind of devastating loss, if you would, in the NFC Championship game after having the lead. Dallas, who knows? I'm not sure what the hell's going on there. All right, so the next group, you got Houston and the Jets at 9.5. Houston, just yeah, I mean, you would think. Again, playing in that division that all of a sudden looks like is theirs for sure. You don't know what Anthony Richardson's going to have for the Colts. You hope. I mean, he showed flashes from when he did play that it's going to be kind of an exciting thing. But again, it's basically going to be his rookie year. He's going to make a lot of mistakes. Tennessee, you know, is Will Levis the guy? I mean, they bring in, you know, another big-time receiver. They basically have a 1A at receiver, and let's see how that works out. But Will Levis, again, an inexperienced quarterback, and Jacksonville just seems to have kind of run aground, if you would. You know, the ship was sailing pretty well there. They make the big comeback in the playoffs a couple of years ago, and then this year just kind of fell off the face of the earth at the end, at the second half of the year. So no real big surprise. Then you got the Jets. Yeah, I guess, you know, the Rodgers bump. So basically they have to go 10-7, which I don't think is a huge, huge increase. But for them, again, health and everything else. Then you got like half the league in the middle here. Chicago, Cleveland, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, the Chargers, the Rams, the Steelers, the Bucks, 8.5. You see any surprises there, Alex? I mean, anything stand out in that group?
I'm buying the Jaguars, Lou. I mean, I'm buying the Jaguars.
Making
a comeback. I think they'll get at least 10 wins.
I'm a Dougie P guy. Yeah, I'm a Doug Peterson guy, so I can see that. I think the Rams are, again, being grossly undervalued. Again, I mean, Stafford going to be healthy, but, you know, Cooper Kupp, you know, comes back. I mean, hopefully fully healthy and, obviously Aaron Donald's going to be a huge piece to fill, but I think they're being undervalued a little bit. And then at 7.5, you got the Saints, Seattle, and Washington. So, you know, rookie quarterback starting for Washington, If not, it's Marcus Mariota. So I don't know, 7.5 might be a little ambitious for them. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be putting a ton of money on the over there, right? I just think that, yeah, I'm playing it cool. I'm playing it savvy. I'm gonna take the under there for those boys. I just, you know, it's a lot of games to win, especially for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, Seattle's an interesting one because it seems to me like the rest of the team outside of quarterback. I mean, obviously 2 years ago, Geno had the season of his life. Last year kind of came back down to earth a little bit. They trade away their backup quarterback, Drew Lock. They bring in Sam Howell. Is that for competition? Are they going to be drafting a quarterback? I'm sure these are going to change as we go through the off season. So, these aren't in stone by any stretch, for everybody listening. But, as it stands right now, a lot of question marks there. 6.5, you got Arizona, the Raiders, Minnesota, and the Giants. I don't know. Call me nuts. And again, I'm not a huge Sam Darnold fan, but I got Minnesota. I mean, to me, that seems really low to me. I think they certainly will win at least 8 games. 6.5. Give me that all day.
I think the Vikings are going to walk away with the first round quarterback. I think they're going to try to swing a
Well,
big trade
they're certainly put
for
themselves in the
Skoll.
position to do it. They 2 first round picks, 11 and 23. They certainly, are angling in that direction.
I just don't think they're going to be like a team that would try to settle for JJ McCarthy. I think they're a team that is going to swing big and go for that third overall pick with the Patriots. I think that's where they're aiming if the right guy falls to them. I don't know who the right guy is, whether it's Drake May or Jaden Daniels, but I think if the right guy is there, they're going to swing it and they're going to try to take a big home run swing there. So I don't think JJ McCarthy. I don't think that's who they're aiming. I think they want one of those top three quarterbacks, and
Hell,
that's where they're going to
Alex, if
try to
you
get.
believe any of the reporting or any of the buzz, JJ McCarthy looks like he's going to go in the top five.
That's not happening, Lou. That's a big white lie there, okay? He's
Come
a he
on,
is. I mean,
Alex, bring
somebody
it.
is pushing it, right? That's
Bring it. Come
ridiculous. That's
on.
ridiculous. I mean, with all
I'm
due
teeing you up
respect,
here. Let's go.
he's like the biggest wild card. You don't know what you're gonna get with him, but there's no way he can be a top five pick, especially with those top three quarterbacks, with those top three boys staying there. How can you choose like JJ McCarthy ahead of Drake May or Jaden Daniels? Might be smoking something. You're probably down in the Colorado mountains, or if you're gonna do something crazy like that. I mean, if Washington will not make a move like that. I'll tell you. Somebody is pushing this wild carousel.
Happens every year. I mean,
Yeah,
what, Zach,
I don't get it.
maybe, and
JJ
it's,
McCarthy.
but nobody seems to want to learn the lesson. Zach Wilson, I mean, outside of, that, I guess it was it part of the COVID year or whatever? They had a bunch of games, not a bunch, at least a few games that got either canceled or moved. And I don't know. I mean, did you see Zach Wilson going number two that year with those other guys? You had Mac Jones and Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence, and you had all these guys, Trey Lance, all these guys, and Zach Wilson ends up going second. Now, with all due respect, none of those guys have really panned out. Trevor Lawrence is still on his team, and it still looks like he's got the trajectory to be at least a good starter in the league, but the rest of them are all in different teams. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of screw-ups, and I don't know. Again, this is a great smoke. Whoever's blowing this is doing a great job because he's sucking everybody in.
But with all due respect, I mean, Zach Wilson hype train began that season. I mean, he had a great year, Lou. I mean, he had a
well, he threw,
BYU.
He,
I get
he
it.
Was in a,
but I mean,
he was in a passing offense. So, I mean, basically the games that he played were all about him. Much, I guess, if you're watching.
But you got people excited, you know, that live arm, you know, the ability
well, I mean,
to throw
JJ,
into tight
JJ's
windows.
Pro, JJ,
to sling it out there.
JJ's pro day was no slouch either, Alex. You never
you
know.
Still look at the games. Forget about
it
pro
only
days. You still look at the games.
Well,
okay?
That's kind of where Zach Wilson where it, like really went nuts, right? Now, again, it's in the media. It's people like us watching. Like, oh, my gosh, this is crazy. Now, I'm not including you in this, Alex, of course. But, you know, people like me, you see these things like, oh, my God, this guy's so great. But I don't know. I just didn't think that kid coming from that program would be the number two pick overall. Whereas McCarthy, I think it's more of a, we haven't seen him be asked to do a lot of these things. So there's like that air of mystery, like hell, maybe if he did get the chance to throw it, you know, 30 times a game, we would see a lot more of these pro throws where, you know, it just happened intermittently during the course of the year. Now, of course he had his his share of clunkers. But yeah, I'm not saying that I would take him that high, but it looks like the trajectory is he's certainly the guy this year that's being pushed up. So, all right.
Well, I could see him being drafted from 10 to 20,
yeah.
But there's no way he's a top 10 quarterback. All right. I mean, a top 10 player in this draft. I mean, again, you must. That. I mean
the quarterbacks are certainly get pushed up, you know, so I don't know that you can go strictly by that. I mean, Brock Bowers I think is a top 10 player in the draft, but he may not go in the top 10 just because of the position he plays. So there's, you know, I mean, there's different reasons for some of these guys, and quarterbacks always get overvalued and some guys get pushed down just because of the position they play.
Agreed. I mean, quarterbacks always get pushed up. I completely agree with you. And J.J. McCarthy is going to go much higher than I think you and I anticipated. he's not going to be a top three player or a top 10 player. Okay, let's dial it down a little bit. Okay, I mean, the fact that there's a great mystery, we're talking over under here.
Alex, if we set it at 8, you're going definitely below the bar. In other words, from 9 below, right?
Yeah.
So he's not going 8 absolutely. Or above. I would have to just because of the betting markets and how people get a little whatever. We'll talk about that another day. Now the dregs of the NFL at 5.5, the Denver Broncos and the Tennessee Titans, and then at 4.5, Carolina and New England. And I would say Carolina, you would think they'd be better, but hell, you trade your best player away on defense for what seemed like not such a good return, but they needed the draft picks. They didn't want to pay him. Hell, 2 years ago, I think the Rams offered them 2 first-round picks for Brian Burns, and they didn't do it. Different regime, so you got to adapt. We're not even going to take the time to talk about those teams right now, so let's move on to the draft. We have kind of started that conversation a little bit, Alex. Who do you see? Who's the guy that you think is being undervalued that we should be looking at a little bit higher in the draft since JJ is, you know, at the other end of that stick?
Let's move away from quarterbacks. I think
we don't have to say quarterback, just any player.
I think it's the offensive tackles in this draft, Lou.
Yeah.
I think it's a very deep draft, especially at the top. With those blindside protectors, whether it's left tackles or right tackles. And I think there's some guys that are still being undervalued. I feel like there's some teams pushing the narrative that some teams should draft wide receivers in the top 10. But those teams, They need offensive linemen. They need offensive tackles badly. Like,
it's
I think
not
the Giants
sexy,
at
though,
six.
Alex. Well, we want to make a splash.
Okay, Lo, I know it's not sexy.
We want to excite our
right?
fans.
I get it.
It's a
Lo,
TV
I get
show.
It. I mean,
we
the
have
draft
to entertain.
OBJ is sexy. I get Lo, there's no way you draft a wide receiver at six if you're the New York Giants. Your offensive line sucked last year.
Hell, they might be. They might be drafting a quarterback,
drafting
Alex.
A quarterback, I get it. I mean, if they don't make that trade up for a quarterback, for say like Drake May, you draft an offensive tackle over a wide receiver. You do it 99 times out of 100. You bring Andrew Thomas back, you put him at left tackle, but then you get a guy like Joe Alt, and he could be your right tackle. And those of you have the bookends to protect Daniel Jones or whoever your quarterback is going to be. I know it's not sexy, but you can get your wide receiver in the second round. That second round wide receiver is going to outplay your top 10 wide receiver that you were drafting at six. That's my 2 cents for Joe Shan and all those smart guys that the Giants front office has. You draft an offensive tackle or a wide receiver any day of the week, unless Marvin Harrison Jr. falls to six, but that ain't happening, okay? The Cardinals aren't passing on him at number four. So it's not sexy, Lou, but those teams win because they draft offensive linemen in the top 10, and that's the safe pick instead of getting a fancy wide receiver, a Lamborghini that you know is able to run a 4.3 but can't catch the football out there. So that's what you do. That's why the 49ers every time are in the Super Bowl, and that's why the Giants are winning two games every season, because they draft a wide receiver over an offensive tackle. That's my 2 cents over there. I know I'm not Mel Kiper on ESPN trying to teach people how they should draft, but you know, that's, I'm just telling them what they should do.
Mel Kiper,
if the Giants draft a wide receiver at six,
pros like us. Well, I'll have to tag him and then we send this
out. If the Giants draft a wide receiver at six, I think that entire coaching staff and the entire front office should get fired right there and then once they make that pick. That's what I'm thinking.
So this turned into a Giants conversation all of a sudden. They're getting lambasted. Where do you draw the line then, Alex? You said, okay, Marvin Harrison, he would go to the Cardinals, who I would think you'd have to agree they could probably use a stud offensive lineman. How do you look at that and say, okay, we have to weigh this? We know this is a very deep draft at wide receiver, at least on paper. And I don't know, maybe the media and, again, guys like me are overvaluing how many really good wide receivers there are. Marvin Harrison, supposedly, you know, and depending on who you talk to, I mean, some people like Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, they kind of have them in a close cluster. How do you decide between then what the offensive tackle would do for you versus that stud wide receiver? Like where do you draw it? How is Arizona's decision different than the Giants?
To me, Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one player on the board. He's the number one player in this draft, regardless of, you know, those quarterbacks that get pushed up. I have him as my number one guy on the big board. So if you have a number one guy on your big board, and I would assume Arizona isn't looking to draft a quarterback, right? Probably have Marvin Harrison Jr. as your number one player. There's no way you pass on a number one player at number four. And plus, they drafted Paris Johnson last year. They drafted him in the top 10. He's been a pretty good tackle for them this year at right tackle. You assume that eventually he's going to take over at left tackle because, I mean, that was the reason why they drafted him in the top 10 to begin with. So the fact that they drafted an offensive tackle last year, I think you got to come as your number one player, Murray. I mean, he is your franchise quarterback. You gave him all that money. Now you got to get him that shiny new toy at wide receiver. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. stands out above the rest the wide receivers that I've seen in this draft. So I love Roma Dunze. I do. But I just think that Harrison is on a different planet.
Okay, so in short, you've got your board stacked, okay?
Right.
And you're just looking at, you know, how you've rated these guys. If you trust your scouts, you trust your front office, everything else, if you're the owner sitting there with the GM and say, okay, we're taking this guy because, you know, outside of quarterback, we've got ours. He's the best player in this draft. Even if we count those quarterbacks, he's the best player in this draft. You take him. Theoretically, you should do that on every pick, right?
The Cardinals didn't have a problem drafting a wide receiver before, right? I mean, they drafted Larry Fitzgerald at number 3, and that was, I understand it was a different regime, but for Kyler Murray to be successful in that offense, you need to get him a number 1 wide receiver. Like I said before, clearly the top prospect in this draft. So I'm going to give Kyler Murray the shiny new toy. And I just think with all the pedigree there, you know, Marvin Harrison, you know, his father played in the league for so long. The bloodlines do matter. This kid looks special. And he might be like the next AJ Green or maybe even something closer to Calvin Johnson. Not as freaky, but, you know, something closer to that because he's a good route runner. He's got great hands. You know, he can play on the outside, on the inside. You can move him around. He's a versatile piece. And it's hard to argue against that. As far as the Giants are concerned, how can they draft a wide receiver at 6 if they give up like 100 sacks a season? If their quarterback can't stay upright, doesn't matter who it is, Tyrod Taylor, Daniel Jones, or a new quarterback, you need to draft an offensive tackle to complement. Say you bring Andrew Thomas back, he's going to play left tackle. You got to bring in a guy maybe like Joe Alt from Notre Dame to be your right tackle. Those bookends are so important. I mean, you see the 49ers being successful. And the reason why they've been successful and they can get the ball out to Debo or, you know, some other weapons out there is because they can protect the quarterback. They can protect Brock Purdy. Same thing with the Chiefs. I mean, they went out there. They got the two bookends so they can protect Patrick Mahomes a little bit more. So I think the Giants, it's clear cut to me, they need to draft another offensive tackle before they address the wide receiver position, something they can get in the second round because, I mean, this is a deep draft when it comes to wide receiver.
Yeah, and I guess to that point, I mentioned earlier, you know, Harrison, Adunze, Neighbors, I think.
And so they,
I don't want to say universally, but I think for everybody that I trust and have read, those are the top three guys. Then it becomes kind of, okay, now what flavor do you like? Because you got guys like Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, Keon Coleman. I mean, you can go down the list. Malachi Corley, Roman.
And so they,
Wilson, Xavier Leggett. I mean, there's a lot of names, but a lot of these guys have been extremely productive. The other guys from Washington, Jalen Polk and Jalen McMillan, really good players. Tez Walker from North Carolina, Javon Baker. How, when you say deep, Alex, how many of these guys would you say are worthy of a first round pick?
I don't know, maybe even 7 or 8, because I mean, we see a lot of these guys. So they get like at the end of the first round, some guys are going to be pushing that grade. I mean, not all the teams have like a first round grade on some of the guys that you listed. They probably second round pick.
I doubt it. Yeah.
But I think some teams would push for it, Lou. Some teams would try to trade back up and get some of that speed, get guys that can stretch the field. It's so important in today's game. A guy that can take the top off the defense. And you mentioned a lot of guys that can do that in this draft. So I would say 7 or 8 can go in the first round, honestly. I'm not saying that many would go. There's a chance that a few of them could sneak into the latter half of the first round.
So you mentioned offensive tackle. I mean, it looks like the depth in this draft is, you know, again, depending on who you talk to and what you like, perhaps quarterback, but that's a whole different discussion. But wide receiver, offensive tackle, corner. So you've got some areas that, there's some guys. There's definitely guys. So what's going to get pushed up? I mean, most importantly, you always say, offensive line, defensive line, as far as I'm concerned. So in terms of the offensive lineman, you already mentioned Joe Alt. You've got Taliese Fuanga, Troy Fatanu, the kid from Penn State, Olu Fashanu.
I
Wow. So
think
three.
Tyler Guyton is going to get pushed up.
Guyton from Oklahoma, Mims from Georgia, Latham from Alabama. These guys, I think, are kind of considered, at least in my view, first round picks. Do you see anybody else kind of pushing that, or do you disagree with any of those guys?
No, I think those guys are going to. I think they should be. Offensive tackles always get pushed up, just like quarterbacks do. And I mean, it's tough to find those, protectors on the bookends. And those guys always get pushed up every draft. I see it. And wide receivers, though, I always say this: day two guys, they always outplay those first round counterparts. And it's going to happen this year as well, just because those kind of like an X on their back, and they're like, why wasn't I a late first round pick? Why was I second round pick? Why was I a third round pick? Did they have questions about my durability or my speed? I'm going to show them. Those guys always outplay those first round counterparts. I think this is not a good draft for pass rushers. I mean, a couple of guys are going to go early, but overall, this is really bad draft when it comes to finding those guys that can get after the quarterback. But you're right, wide receivers, offensive tackles, and quarterbacks. It seems to be a good draft for those three positions.
Yeah, speaking of the edge rushers, you've got a few guys here that one guy that's very interesting to me is a kid from UCLA, Laiatu Latu, where he, I think, had
Overall, this is.
like medically retired. He was at Washington, University of Washington, I should say, and had a neck injury and was told that he shouldn't play anymore. Goes to LA, transfers to UCLA, gets medically cleared, and he may be I mean, you've got Dallas Turner and Jared Verse as well, but in terms of upside and guys that are just athletically gifted and has shown production on the field, what are your thoughts on Latu? Do you have him at the top of this edge rushers group, or where do you have him?
Always an interesting case when you've got guys retiring and then all of a sudden they come back and have like great year with another team. Kind of reminds me of a situation with Jalen Phillips.
Am I
Remember that?
well,
Jalen
ironically
Phillips
UCLA
retired.
on the first end, and then
Right, he retired at
goes to Miami?
UCLA and then he resurfaced back at like
Well, it sounds like
Miami.
these are maybe almost forced on the kid, like almost he's being told by the medical community, and it's not like it was his choice, which, at that age, some older dude telling you that you can't play anymore, yeah, you might look at it a little bit differently. But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I would have Dallas Turner as my clear cut, like number one guy. Latu would be my second guy on there. So
Okay.
for me, it's always tough to evaluate if you don't know the entire medical history. Okay, I
Right.
don't
Oh,
know what his
absolutely. I mean,
tests
you
were at the combine. I
just
wouldn't push the kid in the top 10
yeah.
because I mean there are some questions for me. Dallas Turner has been, a consistent player over the last couple of years. So I think he's the guy that's going to get pushed up and probably is going to be the number one guy for most teams. Rushers are guy on their turn.
So everything that we say, again, for listeners, maybe tuning in for the first time or just don't pay that much attention to the draft, is that everything that we say is short of having access to the medicals, or at least, having a lot of I guess, medical opinions on some of these injuries, as well as the personal interviews that are a huge part of this whole thing when you're making these selections. So, you know, you have to kind of take, you know, what we're saying with a grain of salt based on kind of what we've seen them do on the field and playing. Alex, you know, having a little bit closer eye to it in terms of the scouting angle and kind of looking for specific things on the field. But yeah, you certainly all, I mean, those are like the two, probably the two biggest considerations. Once you've kind of identified the athleticism, the production, well, now it's like, hey, can't, you know, is this guy physically able to hold up? And then the other part is, how much does he love the game? Now, typically these guys that come back from like these catastrophic injuries, you got to believe they love it, but you still want to get, look them in the eye, talk to them face to face. Is he going to be a good teammate? Is he going to fit in our culture? All those really important things. And that's just kind of on the surface. Chop Robinson, I mean, again, he's one of these Penn State guys that, again, is kind of the athletic guy, is a projection, and they've done this before. Odafe Owe, and I'm sure there have been others, but most recently him, he plays for Baltimore. I don't know how many sacks he had at Penn State, maybe like a handful, if that. And he's starting, you know, he's a starting edge rusher for the Baltimore Ravens. So is Chop Robinson in that class, you think?
Well, I think he's a freak. I mean, he's a freak that's going to attract a lot of teams. I mean, as far as guys that teams that are looking for athletic guys, they have the frame, they have all the, you know, athletic numbers to kind of back it up. But again, those guys always scare me, Lou. Always scare me. Guys that never really showed up. You know, guys that maybe had like a handful of sacks during their career. I mean, what did he have his last year at Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge, four projections. Sacks? Yeah.
I mean, again, the it's numbers, tough the to numbers push don't a guy always, like that.
For. Yeah, I mean, the numbers don't always tell everything, but they do tell something.
But they do. I mean, for like wide receivers and like these edge rushers, you do look at the production numbers, and a lot of those hold up, you know, guys that maybe have a huge key. A lot of teams seem to overlook it, but the fact is, when you look at the history of the draft, the wide receivers that have been successful, they've had the production in college. And most edge rushers that have been successful at the NFL level have been productive in college. It's very rare when you meet an edge rusher that just has the athletic numbers and you kind of project them to be that guy. You know, guys that maybe had a couple of them, okay? But the statistics weigh that you definitely go with the production over the athletic numbers. And again, so many teams make those mistakes and then, you know, they bypass the guy that has been successful, that has been productive in college. But they don't choose him because he doesn't have the athletic numbers. Purchase my book, Lou. I'm writing guys that maybe have scouting 101. Teams can get it for free.
I think I've been here for all the notes and the ghostwriting, my friends.
I'm doing it, Lou. I'm doing it. Well, I'm going to mail it to all the teams for free. They're going to do it for free. You know, they're going to get a free copy.
That's right. Yeah, we're edifying the group, education, edification. There might be some other words in there that we want to use. But basically, we're just here for you and to give you as much possible information as we can. And then you can decide what's right and what's wrong. But anyway, we'll be joining you again before the draft sometime. We'll talk a little bit more about some of the positions we haven't hit on, some more guys that you may want to look for, especially those day two wide receivers that Alex loves so much and that seem to, in a lot of cases, outperform the guys that went in round one. Corners, of course, linebackers that you're probably not going to see a whole lot of those guys going, some inside offensive linemen that could move outside and that and more and more and more and more. We love the draft. That's what makes it. You never know which way teams are going to go. You've got people projecting guys versus production. production, and we talk about it. It's turned into like this huge industry, and so many people talk about it. It's just so intriguing. The NFL just never stops to amaze. So, for my pal Alex, I'm Lou. Until next time.